Hey everybody, welcome back, or I guess I should say cheerio to all the London blokes joining us today. Big thanks to Lavelle Cook. You know, he's a great dude, and it was really cool to hang out with him. We hung out with him a few weeks ago, so you'll hear references to like Summer League and stuff, obviously not going on at the moment, but yeah. He's a big time scorer in the British Basketball League, and we were fortuitous enough to cross paths with him several years ago in Las Vegas at the GBSL. But you'll get that whole story in this. Yeah, if you like what you hear today, leave a review. You can always find the pod at BYRP365 on Instagram and Twitter. But yeah, that's enough for me. Let's get to Lavelle. Enjoy the show. Today we are joined by one of the smoothest mid-range artists I've had the pleasure to watch. He was a New Orleans go-to scorer at New Orleans University, and after college he dominated a Global Basketball Summer League session, which springboarded him into his first pro contract with British Basketball League's London Lions. In 2020, he was the league's fourth leading scorer, scoring about 20 a game, shooting 49% from three. So, you know, he can fill it up a bit. Lavelle Cook, how you doing today, my man?
I'm good, man. How are y'all? Thank y'all for having me.
Yeah, thanks for joining, man. We're happy to have you. We're happy to reconnect. You know, Andy and I were goofing around in Vegas for a summer, and you were nice enough to give us an interview after you cooked some people at GBSL. yeah, we'll get to GBSL for sure. But we kind of want to start with like you're growing up in New Orleans and you know, coming up on the basketball scene over there, you know, and getting the JUCO route kind of going. But how did you develop? You're a 6'7" guy. Was that always the case? Were you tall at a young age, or is that mid high school that you had that growth spurt kind of thing?
Yeah, I feel like I always was tall. Well, actually, I always was considered short because my brother is taller than me. he's been taller than me like our whole life. He's still taller than me, and so I was actually the short brother growing up, so it's, you know how that goes, but yeah, I hit a growth spurt. I would say right before my freshman year in high school, I hit a growth spurt, but even then my brother was still taller than me, so it was all just, you know, like that.
Man, now that's crazy to hear. And what high school did you kind of come up through, like where did it all start at, man? Where did the hoop journey start?
The hoop journey started officially in middle school. I started playing basketball just heavy in middle school. Before then, I was New Orleans is a music city so before then I was actually in a band.
Okay.
And I tell people that.
What was the instrument?
I played trombone.
Nice.
Yeah, so I tell people that they really like, what? Like, but yeah, like the band was like the thing, like, you know what I'm saying? Middle school, elementary school, you know, that was it, the band. But after that, I really got into basketball like around middle school, just playing every day at recess, you know, like those days, just recess is like the NBA finals. It's like you outside for recess playing hard as hell.
Yeah.
And, I think that's really just, and I always was around the game. I always watched the game, but that's what kind of where I started taking it serious. And that kind of leaped me up into going into high school.
Okay, cool. Yeah, you know, like that's where, like, I guess as a kid, you know, you find the love for the game, man. And that's where it's nice when it starts like that, because it's just like it draws you and makes you want to work even harder, you know, going into high school. So now that's exciting as hell, man. I love stories like that. That's dope.
Did you play AAU at all growing up?
Yeah, I actually didn't play AAU until I moved to Atlanta.
Oh shit.
So I didn't even start playing AAU until my sophomore year of high school.
Nice.
Nice. Yeah, I was in a, I was kind of late to the AAU circuit, but I mean, by the time I hit the AAU circuit, I already, well, I felt like I already was kind of really just knowing who I am as a basketball player. You know, when it's early, you don't, your parents bring you to all these tournaments, you're going to Disneyland and all this other stuff. And yeah, it's just kind of like, all right, I just have to play basketball every day. But I think when I hit the AAU circuit, I kind of was conscious of knowing like, this is something, you know, that will help, and it's something that I need to be doing.
Mm-hmm. What made you move up to Atlanta during that time?
So yeah, I was a freshman in high school, excited, starting. I played varsity, junior varsity and freshman, my freshman year. Was supposed to be starting varsity my sophomore year, and Hurricane Katrina happened, and that kind of just wrapped up everything. Yeah. So we moved to Atlanta after that, and it was weird. It was different, man. Just actually starting over, just with nothing, like just moving into another city. You know what I'm saying? Just finding your way. I have two sisters and a brother, so they was around. But you know, it's just, it brings you closer to your family, and it helps you grow up real fast. And yeah, so that's about the time. I actually play AAU. I play for the Atlanta Celtics.
Okay.
That's a big time squad right there too. Yeah. Anybody you remember from those Atlanta Celtics days for teammates and stuff? I know they play in the big tournaments, those guys.
Yeah, man, like it was crazy because when I moved to Atlanta, Atlanta is a basketball city. Like, New Orleans is not a basketball city. Like, we have a lot of people that come out of New Orleans that went big. One person that just popped out my head is Greg Monroe. Mm-hmm. He's from New Orleans, and, you know, he went pro. It's a lot of other people. But when I moved to Atlanta, it was an eye-opener because the level of competition was so drastic. And it's like, man, like, I got some work to do. Like, every game we was playing – against guys that was one projected one and done, like NBA guys, like in high school, you know, you don't really see that too much. Like the competition level is good in high school in New Orleans, but you're not seeing, like, you're not walking in the gyms brushing elbows with like Derek Favors, or we all remember we played Javaris Crittenden. Do y'all remember Javaris Crittenden?
Oh yeah.
Yeah, like we played that year, Al Farouk.
Yeah.
Chris Singleton, who played for the Wizards for a little bit. Michael Beasley, AAU circuit, Tyreek Evans, all of them was around that time, you know, coming through. So it was very elite.
Yeah.
Nah, those guys are some problems.
Yeah.
Who taught you that shooting stroke you have? You know, you got one, like I said, you got one of the smoother mid-range games I've watched. Was there a specific you know, coach or someone in your family that taught you that smooth stroke?
I used to watch a lot of my shot used to be kind of like a slingshot when I was young.
Okay.
And that's probably the only thing. The only person I can give credit to that was my high school coach. And that was the only tweak that I really made in my shot. Other than that, it's kind of been the same since high school. But growing up, like, I was obviously a big T-Mac fan.
Okay.
A big Dirk fan, and a big Iverson fan, of course. And, of course, the great RIP Kobe.
Yeah. Definitely. No, because that especially those type of players, man, they really utilized the mid-range when they needed it, you know, and being creative. So that was always a cool part of your game. You know, is there, like, when you're playing, for example, like, is, what are you thinking about? Are you making reads, or are you more of a type of player that it flows in a system? Like, what kind of things do you do out there on the court?
I would say for me, it's more about making reads. I think basketball is like dancing, you know what I'm saying? So like, if you have good footwork, then you can never trip up. So like, obviously a lot of people like to take what was given to them as far as a move wise or just the flow wise. But if you can predict or kind of sway what that person going to do, you're always going to have the advantage. The person with the ball always has the advantage because the defense has to react to what the offensive do. So that's kind of, I would say I make a lot of reads. That's very important in basketball for sure.
Yes. Yeah. I like to call it a basket ballet sometimes because, you know, you got to kind of have those feet, a little bit of dancing background to, you know, get that footwork right. Especially, you know, doing the pull-up artist thing that you're doing out there, beating people off the dribble. So did you go back to New Orleans to finish your high school career or did you kind of spend your last few years in Atlanta?
I graduated high school in Atlanta. My mom moved back to New Orleans after we graduated, but I never finished my high school. I actually, as you all know, I went back and played in New Orleans for my last years of college.
Yeah, that must have been awesome to, you know, kind of get back there and, you know, see the old neighborhood and you know, show some friends that I've been up to something since you saw me in high school.
Yep, most definitely.
How'd you end up? So your first stop was Gillette, right?
Yeah, Gillette.
How'd you end up there after Atlanta?
I was I had a friend, DeLorean, who played basketball, who I worked out with, and his dad was a scout for the Knicks, and he's from Detroit. And basically during around that time, like, our whole team in Gillette was from Detroit because his dad would just send guys to the JUCO, you know, guys that whatever may be their situation or case where they had to go the JUCO route, he would just send them, you know, there. So he know where they at, it's safe. You know what I'm saying? It's out the way and guys could go there, study and play basketball. So that's kind of how I got hooked up in Gillette, really.
Okay. How was that experience while you were there?
It was different, man. Gillette is in the middle of nowhere in Wyoming.
Yeah.
It snows a lot. Just grass and trees, literally.
Yeah, but, man.
it was different, but it keeps you focused, though. Like, you know, it's not a lot of distractions out there.
Yeah. Was that your first snow with, you know, growing up in New Orleans and going to Atlanta? I don't imagine had many chances to see snow before that.
It snowed in Atlanta, and I've been to like New York and things before I went there, and it snowed, but that was really my first place where I lived it at for like more than a couple months where it snowed. Yeah, like I'm living in the snow now, like, you know what I'm saying? That was the first time I haven't.
So then after, you know, kind of during that time, What was like the workouts like? What were, you know, you said you were really locked in. Did you do extra work or what is the workout like with you?
Usually like around that time, workouts was obviously intense. I would say my JUCO years, my workouts was really intense. It wasn't until after JUCO till I went to New Orleans where I kind of found my pace as a basketball player and kind of knew where like I wanted to, the pace I wanted to play at and just really slow down the game. JUCO is very competitive because, I mean, everybody is out there trying to, you know, go D1. And it's really one speed. It's just really everybody moving 100 miles per hour. You know what I'm saying? You have these guys that come through the JUCO that, you know, like, high level guys, and you could just tell their pace and their feel for the game is different. I don't think that actually hit me until after I left JUCO, but when it did, you know, I accepted it and it helped me a lot.
Definitely.
What was your role in that that 1 year at Gillette? Did you get a lot of tick? Were you a go-to scorer guy like you ended up being, or was it slowly getting the opportunity?
I was a starter. My role was, I mean, like JUCO is crazy. It's a crazy situation because it's like you have five guys that's all gunners. It's kind of like you have five guys that's all gunners. And it's like, you know, every possession really counts. It's not like where you have a team where like we run sets And we going to make sure we get a post touch, or we going to make sure we set a down screen for this guy. It's really just like fast break, like try to score within the first 10 seconds of the shot clock. You know, it's full court press. It's stuff like that. You know what I'm saying? And it's necessary, though, as a basketball player, for sure, because if you're not ready for something like that, it's like a whirlwind, man, when it hits you.
Definitely. Definitely right about JUCO ball, you know, especially the guys that want to play it. You know, that's a great advice right there, man. Like, you know, understanding what you're going into and being ready for it, bro. Some players aren't ready for it. It'll eat you up.
Yeah. If you're not ready for it, man, it definitely eats you up with the basketball side, and depends on what city you in, the outside of basketball life, man, it gets kind of rough, but it is what it is. It's necessary. It's life.
Definitely
Important stepping stones. A lot of pro players' careers, whether they end up NBA or overseas making money playing hoops, it's definitely a route that's, you know, we encourage kids to take and not, you know, give up on it kind of thing. Go do that JUCO. Go get after it there. You'll get your opportunity like you did. So you went to – how did Northern Oklahoma end up on your radar in Enid?
I ended up going to Northern Oklahoma after Gillette. It was the same through the same guy. Nice. I just decided to switch sceneries, but it wasn't too much different. It snowed in Oklahoma every day as well, so yeah. It was kind of like the same year in 2 years.
Yeah.
As far as basketball wise, that year I ended up getting injured. Nothing serious, knock on wood, but yeah, that year really just being in JUCO and actually like tweaking something. It was my knee at the time. It builds a lot of character, because it's the same. Like, you want to go out there, you like, okay, this is my second year of JUCO, you know, and you want to really have a good season so you can be able to put yourself in position to go to a major D1 school.
Definitely. During that time, like, just with rehab wise, like, what were there like some challenges with that, or, you know, did you have to miss a lot of time?
Yeah, I believe I was out for it was towards the ending of the season. Mm-hmm. So I didn't miss too much time. I maybe missed about a little under a month.
Okay.
A little under a month, maybe like 3 weeks. But that's just a whole nother world in itself. That's for any athlete just trying to get back to 100% off of injury. You know what I'm saying?
Absolutely. Andy and I know too well, unfortunately. So you must have not done too bad at North Oklahoma with, you know, D1 New Orleans giving you a call right after. How did, you know, what was that like finally getting that big D1 opportunity that you've been waiting for and trying to kind of working for? And, you know, what was that call like?
It was different because I decided to go back home, which I had no intentions of doing throughout those 2 years of JUCO. I just wanted to travel and be somewhere else. I didn't want to go back home to play basketball. I didn't want to go back home for college. But that year, the University of New Orleans was D1 independent. We was independent my first year. And we had just got a new coach Mark Schlesinger. And I talked to him. He came to my house, and he's a very good human being. Take away coach basketball, and he really sold me, man. He said, you know, there's a place where you could be comfortable, a place where you could do what you do, and I'd love to have you. And it's somewhere that I went, and I'm glad I went there.
Yeah, definitely. Yeah.
It's good to find a spot where, you know, you're wanted, and you got a coach that, you know, will let you be you kind of thing. Cause, I mean, that's definitely a big part of, you know, letting a scorer be comfortable and do his thing is, you know, best way to get the efficiency out of it. Rather than trying to put you in a box.
Of course, man. Like those 2 years was really my, I would say really jump started me into like just having a mindset of being a pro.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying? Like it's definitely a mindset. And I think those 2 years I learned that mindset, and that's where I learned my work ethic I always was full force with my work ethic, just making sure I get my extra work in. But at New Orleans, Coach Slash really helped me, like, see that you always have more, like, in your tank. Like, you know what I'm saying? Like go harder. Mm-hmm. And that kind of put the battery in my back to where, like, I'm just making sure, like, my workouts would be, like, 1,000 makes on the gun a day. That's a full day. 500 would be a half day. Just before I do anything. And, you know, I was in New Orleans, which is fairly a party city, but before I do anything, that's where I'm at. That's where you can find me.
Yeah, no, that's that, like you're saying, that pro mindset, man. Like, you know, a lot of players, you know, they miss that part, and, you know, they just don't get that extra work while others are, and that's where they get passed up. So that's a great, you know, do you still talk with Coach Slesh still? Do you guys still talk to this day?
Of course, man. I just, a couple months ago, I went to New Orleans to see my mom. I haven't been back in a long time. And, of course, I seen Coach Slesh. Uh-huh. And we chopped it up and we talked. It's always love whenever I'm in New Orleans with Coach Slesh. Even to today, when I'm in New Orleens, that's where I'm working out at, you know what I'm saying, at UNO.
Absolutely.
Nice. You said you kind of didn't plan on going back to New Orleans for a bit there, but, you know, in hindsight, was it kind of like, you know, it was the best place for you kind of thing, and you had a lot of fun there? Was there any, like, you know, big tournaments or big games that stick out to you that, you know, you went off in? Or
yeah, I think in hindsight it was definitely where I was meant to go. Like I said, my first year there, we was independent, so we traveled crazy. And to speak on Coach Slesh, I just keep going back to Coach Slesh. But to speak on Coach Slesh, he made sure, like, the group we had really enjoyed the experience outside of basketball. So we would travel, like, obviously we would play, like, Hawaii, but we would stay in Hawaii for, like, a week. We would travel, play UNLV, go to Vegas. We would be everywhere, you know what I'm saying? With that independent schedule, it's very open for you to play a lot of different Division I teams. Mm-hmm. So that was a fun part of that year. I remember I hit the game winner when we played San Jose in New Orleans. It's a couple memorable trips, you know. But we had a good group that year, and that first year was very fun.
Yeah, average 14 points a game. I mean, that was, you know, pretty great in itself. That's hard feat to be able to do, Division I, man. Like, so it just kudos to you and your work and the squad, man, like, for real. So, you know, I guess, like, one question that I have, you know, just – and this is from, you know, just being a, you know, athlete and, you know, coaching. You know, is there anything that you can give to youth players right now as far as – that they can take away and they can learn from as far as your mindset and not give up, you know, because all that traveling and all that, you know, it wears you down, you know. Yeah. And, you know, is there things that you can give them that, you know, stay focused during the times when, you know, like, for example, you go AAU, you kind of want to hang out, you want to, like, but how do you keep that pro mindset, you know, when there's so many distractions?
I would say, number one, respect the game. Work is necessary in any job. So I would say, number one, respect the game and just stay in the moment. A lot of people, it's good for a basketball player to have a short memory. Whether that memory is good or bad, you have to keep moving. And if you stay in the moment, you don't have time to actually think about the last shot, the last practice, the last game. You know what I'm saying? Once it's over with, you reflect on it and you just keep it pushing, and you try to push your boundaries. And as a basketball player, as people, like, our possibilities are unlimited. You know what I'm saying? So that work, you got to stand on it. You know what I'm saying? And people always say, like, people ask me questions like, oh, do you have, like, butterflies, or do you have, like, before a big game, or do you ever get nervous before a big game, or something like that, or and I say, nah, because I trust my work ethic. You feel me? Like, I know what I've been through, so it can't be nothing that I haven't seen already.
That's big time.
Yeah, man.
The Coachella sounds like a good time, and picking a nice spot like Hawaii to go to, and yeah, going to Las Vegas. Hey, like if you're a coach and you get to design your own schedule, why not go to places that you want to go on vacation anyways?
Go play some basketball, have a good time. You know what I'm saying? In the middle of, he was a big stickler on school too. Everywhere we go, I remember it was like hours and hours of study hall, just crazy study hall hours. But I guess that was his way of just keeping us, you know, keeping us grounded and keeping us together. But it was fun, man. It was real good.
That's awesome. What was your second year there? Like, I guess you're technically your senior year, you know, with UNO. What conference did you guys end up in?
Southland.
What was that transition like going from, you know, independent to now you got like the same kind of 10 teams you got to play a couple times?
Well, actually, my senior year, it was that we was in transition. So we were still independent. They didn't actually make the transition to the Southland until after I left.
Gotcha. Okay.
And to speak for the university, the years after I left, they right now, I think they predicted preseason number one for the conference. Yeah, so nice. It definitely made some noise in that conference once they hit it. But yeah, so for both of my years, we was pretty much independent, which is cool. I mean, a lot of people want to play, like a lot of people that go D1, like want to, you know, go to the tournament and actually, you know, play on that stage. But for independent schools, you literally have to go like 33-0.
Yeah. Yeah.
So like, I mean, it was cool. Like I enjoyed, like basketball is basketball globally. So like, I got the experience to just go and walk in these big gyms and drop 20 against these big D1 schools. It's, you know, like us. But as far as tournament wise, that year, obviously we didn't go to the tournament, but my basketball experience at New Orleans was very pleasant. And I think it actually springboarded me into and got me ready for the next level for sure.
Awesome. That's what it's about, man. Like, truthfully, like if you can have a college experience like that, you know, in the classroom and on the floor, then it's completely worth it. Because at the end of the day, you know, you're very few people, man, that get to play ball and get paid to do it, you know, and that's just a remarkable journey in that. So, you know, kind of what happened, you know, after, you know, you leave New Orleans, you graduate, everything like that. What's the next move? Like what came about with the GBSL in Vegas?
So after I finished at New Orleans, I went back to Atlanta actually. Mm-hmm. And I was working out in Atlanta. I made a lot of basketball friends in Atlanta, just coaches, trainers, just from my time there. So I was actually working out in Atlanta. I went to a prep school for a half a year in Atlanta, and through that I met a guy that put me in contact with Daryl at the GBSL.
Yeah, Daryl's a good guy. Did you kind of always have on your radar, you know, playing basketball professionally, like even when you know, you were a junior and senior at UNO, that was always kind of the carrot at the end that you were hoping for?
Oh yeah, of course. Like when the season was over, like I that's where really my full attention went to. I still joke with my mom, like when the season, like a couple months after the season was over, I was in Atlanta, and my mom was like, "Where are you? You in Atlanta? You still got school? Like school isn't over." Like, you know what I'm saying? Like I was already working out, like, yo, I'm getting ready, you know what I'm saying, for what's next to come. And so, yeah, I already was, that's where my mind was at for sure.
Nice. Yeah. And we, like we said, we watched you at GBSL, and Andy and I were sitting there in the stands with a couple other guys that were a little more salaried basketball professionals than us for sure. And everybody in that stand was like, yo, who is this 6'6" wing that is just pulling up on everybody right now? Like, you hooked that league. And, you know, what was that like? Did you realize like, oh, like this is a collection of dudes that are getting contracts elsewhere and I am sticking out like a sore thumb right now?
Yeah, man. My first year, because I kind of knew what to expect, not really though. I just kind of knew like the competition level, like, you know what I'm saying? Mm-hmm. Anytime you go in that type of situation, everybody just has this mindset of I want to play good, you know what I'm saying? Not mess up. And I remember the first, like, so you get your team, like those camps is crazy because like you just walk to the gym with like 50 other dudes that you don't even know. And it's like, they group you up into teams. You have like a couple practices and then this jump ball is like ready to go. So I just remember the tension just being super like super thick. Like even in like in layup lines, or if you get a layup, everybody like, duck it, you know, cause it's eyes on you, you know, you want to leave a good impression. Like everything is sharp. But I just remember going in there and just, I was pretty comfortable and just really playing my game, man, really. And it showed.
Definitely showed. I remember a matchup. Emil Clayton was another kid that got a contract out of that summer league, and you both were kind of like going off. Me and Andy would sit through any game that you two were in, and eventually you matched up against each other. And it for a while there was just like one-on-one, and everyone's like, these guys are going to do their thing, because – it was Bucket City for both of you that game. Do you remember that one, Will?
Yeah, I remember, man. I met a lot of people at the GBSL. Like, I still keep in contact with some of the coaches that I played for there. Mm-hmm. I actually went back and I played. Brandon Boggs was on my team, and I ended up playing with him in the BBL in Bristol. Oh, nice. A lot of the people that was on my team that first year, I remember a couple of them went to the Canadian League. Or something like that, but I still keep in contact with guys from the GBSL for sure.
Definitely.
Yeah, it's a really, really cool league. Andy and I met a lot of good people out there. And Emil, I believe, was one of the guys that ended up in Canada with Coach Mags and company up in Brampton and stuff.
Yeah.
Did you know that you were gonna get a contract? Like as that ended, you were like, oh, I locked this thing up. Like, Were you kind of aware of your moment there?
I wasn't aware of my moment. Only thing I actually knew was like, you know, okay, like I'm playing pretty good. I was averaging like 24 points. And I was like, okay, I got a good feeling, you know. It's a good feeling. And I ended up signing actually before I even left Vegas that year. I met Vince, the coach for London Lions, and I ended up signing. So my trip back home was very relaxed and pleasant. You know, I felt like the job was done, which was complete for sure.
Definitely. No, that's got to be a great feeling, like being able to go back home and tell your mom that, you know, share that with family too. What was everybody's reaction?
I mean, that's kind of what I went there to do. Was, you know, that's the main goal when you go there. Of course, you meet a lot of people and you do a lot of things. But at the end of the day, you're going there to get a job. So I kind of, it was a relief. And that's rare. A lot of players don't actually sign. Like, usually it's more like talking stages, or like, you know, weeks after the camp where like teams will hit you up, you know what I'm saying, and then you end up signing later. But I mean, when I met Vince, I knew that's where I wanted to be, and I didn't really too much know about the BBL, but Vince is definitely cool people, and I like the city of London. It's something that, somewhere that I always wanted to be, basketball or no basketball, so that was kind of a no-brainer for me.
Oh, wow. Talk about that.
That's amazing.
What made you want London before anything with basketball? What's the attraction to London?
I just like the culture. I like the architecture out here, the people. I actually like the weather. A lot of people don't like London weather. It's very dark and gloomy, but I feel like that's what makes London London. So when it definitely has a vibe to it. Like when you're in South Beach or in Miami, it feels like you're in South Beach. You know what I'm saying? You got that South Beach vibe. I feel like that's the same thing with London. Like when I'm out in London, it's nice because I'm like, yo, like I'm in London. You feel me?
Yeah.
Yeah, that's big time too. You know, British Basketball League is a pretty damn good league in terms of European leagues. And the London Lions are perennial, you know, contenders. They're a good squad in that league too. So that's Yeah, that's huge. I know probably not everybody realizes that when you went home and told them, but once they looked up along the lines, they're probably like, oh, Jesus, this is no cupcake.
Well, most definitely. I remember it all happened. I remember my first game when I came here. We played Glasgow, which is actually in Scotland. It's away. We drove there, which is not usual anytime. Like anytime we play Glasgow now, we fly there, but we drove there. It was a day trip, and it was horrible. Like I was like 2 for 18, like horrible. I could remember like, damn, like this about to be over with. But I remember just talking to Vince, and he was like, you know, he made me real comfortable. And I think that's very important in being a basketball player, just comfortability for sure.
Definitely with the coaching staff, is that's a major thing, man. And people don't understand that, but you know, mentally, I'm sure that had to have felt good. Just, you know, you struggle that bad, and then, you know, they're still open and, you know, want to work and see you grow. So that's positive.
Yeah, man. But that just go back to like, you know, the short memory, like, you know what I'm saying? It's not like something like I know I can't do. Like,
yeah,
you have a bad day at the office. You have to have bad days and good days. Nobody gonna have a good game every game.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Feel me?
Yep.
Yeah, you ended up averaging 15 and 5. You know, as a rookie in the BBL, that's pretty damn good. Like 15 points a game. That's more than 15 points a game in the NBA in terms of equivalencies. You know, it's tough to score in those leagues and lower scoring games kind of thing. So what was that like that transition to, you know, the FIBA game, a little bit different style, a little more half court set kind of stuff, not as much up and down. Were there any kind of like learning moments or, instances where you're like, this is a little bit different type of basketball down here?
I think the transition, obviously, the 3-point line is further back. You can knock the ball off the rim, FIBA rules. Other than that, man, it's just basketball. Even when I used to work out, that used to be a part of my workout, was to shoot deep threes. Mm-hmm. Just because you want to have that in your, you know what I'm saying? You want to have that in your back. And I just came out here and just really played my game. We was actually loaded my first year. And we had like the GB team captain, Drew Sullivan, was on the team. We had like the MVP from the year before, Zaire Taylor, was on the team. We had another American vet point guard that was really, really solid, really good, Rob Brown. So I was around quality basketball players and a quality program. So I think that helped me excel.
Yeah, no, and definitely learning from a veteran is like, you know, just having like some vets around you, does that help? Or, were there any things that you kind of picked up from anybody?
I would say the thing I picked up from just being around vet guys is more like how to handle situations. Not too much the basketball side, but just how to handle situations just around basketball, the business of basketball, how to handle yourself around people. You know what I'm saying? I really picked that up.
Yeah, no, that's great, because like, mentors are, I would assume, would be huge, man. Like trying to navigate in a different country.
Yeah.
So that would really help.
Yeah, for sure.
When you got over to London, did it live up to kind of everything you were hoping for and dreaming of? I hear, the UK or British food isn't necessarily the best, but I hear London's actually the hot spot of good food in that area.
Yeah, that was the one thing. The food is real bland. I was eating a lot of, when I first got here, I was eating a lot of pizza, like the chicken shops. Like, you know how you go like on the high street, like get the chicken shops. I was eating that every day. My diet was horrible, but I don't get like, I was at the stage, I'm still at the stage where my metabolism is high. So I can, after practice, like all that'll be gone.
Yeah.
Nice. So what led you back to North America? Because you spent the season after that in Mexico and Canada. You had a 4-game stint with Gigantes Edomex to Luka, and then you were with the Island Storm in NBL for 2016 for three games. What was the story with that?
Okay, so that previously, the year after London, I went to Mexico, and that's a whole nother world. Yeah. Just that South America basketball is just different from Europe basketball. You get a lot of guys that go there really to chase a check.
Mm-hmm.
And so it's real cutthroat, and it's real competitive. Usually you have like two Americans that you're going to just go head to head with, and then it's just like the locals. In Europe, usually the players that's on your team from that country are pretty good. When you get to South America, it's just you and the other American, and y'all just battling it out. You know what I'm saying? Yeah. And I think it was an eye opener. It was definitely an eye opener. It wasn't something that I wasn't ready for, because like I said, it reminded me of like that JUCO scene. Uh-huh. Where it's more fast paced. So it's something that I've definitely seen before, but it was just situational, and I ended up going to Canada through a contact that I knew from GBSL.
Uh-huh. Nice. What was the Canadian League like up there? I believe that was just before it kind of like disbanded and then reformed a couple years later, right?
Yeah. Yeah, I was up there in Prince Edward Island. It snowed a lot as well.
Yeah.
I don't know. I cannot duck the snow, man, everywhere I go.
You heard Island Storm and you were like, nice, finally, summer tropical.
Yeah, I was like, snow, man. It snowed. But I met a lot of good people up there. Shout out to my guy, Ben, who really made sure I was comfortable up there. And I did a lot of camps, like giving back like to the community up there through his program and everything. So my time up there was really nice.
Yeah, man, I love Canada. I went to school up there for a little bit. So Canadians are good people, man. And, you know, definitely I can imagine. And two out there in the East Coast, man, the basketball is super serious too. So that, yeah. I'm glad you had the chance, you know, to work with the youth a little bit. I know that they appreciated that, I'm sure. So that's what's up, man. What was there any games up there against anybody that, you know, that anybody would know? Was the competition solid?
Yeah, the competition was definitely solid. When I got to Canada, it was like four or five Americans on the team. Like it was all that. It reminded me kind of like a G League.
Mm-hmm.
You don't have a lot of, obviously, a lot of European players. It's like all Americans on the team. Mm-hmm. And it was real up pace. And it was real like that G League feel to me. Okay. Yeah.
Did you ever get we're in the middle of summer league right now. Did you ever get a summer league call or anything like that? I feel like if you showed up at a summer league, you would have cooked some dudes for a bit there. Or were you more focused on, like, you know, getting back to Europe?
So the guy who I mentioned, Ben, who really took me in Canada, he was I don't know if you guys remember this. Back then it was the G League, the Bakersfield Jam.
Mm-hmm.
They had a team. I'm not sure if they still have a team. I gotta look that up. I'm not sure yet though. But he was a scout for the Bakersfield Jam.
Mm-hmm.
And he invited me to like a workout with the Bakersfield Jam, and it was really cool. It was a great experience for me, and it was a two-day thing that I went through, and the situation, the business side of it, just it didn't really pan out, so I ended up leaving and going, you know, overseas. But I definitely met like contacts through that for sure.
Yeah,
nice. Yeah, it looks like they're the Motor City Crews now.
Yeah, the Motor City Crews now.
Yeah, D League, G League will bounce around a little bit. But yeah, previously the Bakersfield Jam is now the Motor City Crews. But yeah, that's always interesting too, because you know you're that level of player that like can make a bundle overseas if they're doing it right. And, you know, right. you can, you know, chase the NBA and the G League, you know, right. especially back then. I mean, the contracts are a little better now, but back then D League yeah. contracts were not great, Bob. So
Yeah. No, back then, a lot of people was like the G League was cool, but that's really for like, if you wanted to stay close to home and, yeah. Like you said, chase the NBA. And at that point, I kind of wanted to travel and wanted to be in a different environment.
Yeah.
So that's the way
I think that's a great avenue. You know, I think it goes definitely underappreciated. I think a lot of kids get hung up on not being that top dude in the class, or, you know, maybe they drop out or they get hurt or something. But, you know, there's always that, you know, that way in, whether it's through JUCO or, you know, working your way up through those professional ranks in Europe. You know, you can enter right. a lower league and work your way up to, you know, something as high as the BBL, like you were in with the London Lions. But what brought you to Bristol? Because you ended up at the Bristol Flyers after that.
Yeah, I was actually playing. I did a summer tour in China. Nice. Summer before I went to Bristol. And my coach was a guy that coached in the BBL. John Cofino.
Nice.
So yeah, that's kind of how I got to Bristol. How I got to Bristol through him, just through word of mouth.
What part of China were you guys going through? Did you end up in like Guangzhou or anything like that, or Beijing?
We did Beijing, Shanghai.
Nice.
It's a couple other cities. I don't want to butcher the name.
A little hard, yeah. Yeah. I probably said that first one wrong, to be honest. But so I mean, you love, you know, like the culture of different parts of the world and the architecture. What was that like, kind of getting that opportunity to travel China, you know, with you know, the beautiful game, and, you know, getting right. that kind of chance to do some more, seeing different continents and different cultures? What was that like?
It was real cool, man. Like China is a special place, and they love basketball out there.
Oh yeah.
They love basketball, and it's funny because I like Chinese food.
Okay.
So I was like, I'm about to go to China. It's about to be, you know, OD Panda Express, you know, like, you know what I'm saying? Like, that's not like real Chinese cuisine. Like, that's, of course, America like to put a whole spin on it. So yeah. I'm like, man, that's not what I get. I went out there and I asked for orange chicken, and they was like, yeah, nah. Like, yeah, nah. So that was a shock to me, but besides that, I was just eating like, they served us McDonald's every day, which I didn't like. I guess they figured Americans want American food, which is like McDonald's, KFC, Pizza Hut. But yeah, it was definitely cool, man. It was definitely cool out there.
How long were you out there?
It was for the summer, so I was out nice. There for a good 2.5 months.
Okay.
Nice. Did you do any tourist stuff? Did you check out the Great Wall or anything cool like that?
Yep, we went to the Great Wall. We was in these little cities, man, these villages where people, like, they like, literally live there. They don't leave their village. So like when we go into these villages, they never seen like a basketball player or a guy that looked like me, like, the coming through there, you know what I'm saying? So that was real, like, eye-opening, just to meet people and connect with people, like, you know, that would value your presence and what you have to say. And we gave out things like book bags and everything when we wasn't playing basketball. So that was cool.
Oh yeah.
Nice. I know you have that that clothing company, Scum Worldwide. Were you already doing that? Were you able to kind of plant some seeds over there while you were out there?
At the time I did have it, but I wasn't as adamant. I really was basketball focused. As far as my brand, I kind of just rebranded it a couple years ago, 2 years ago, and it's been full force ever since then. But when I was in China, man, I wish that would have been clutch.
Right. That's a good market to tap into.
Yeah, it would have been clutch.
You mentioned the American food that they were giving you guys. One thing that, you know, I'm trying to get there someday, but you know, I know that the Taco Bells in China are very different from America. Did you ever check that out?
Nah, I don't even eat Taco Bell in America.
That's probably for the best.
Yeah, I'm definitely not gonna go to China and eat Taco Bell.
Nice. Yeah, they got a little different spin. It's like Taco Bell Supercenter XL over there. So I was curious if they ever treated you guys with that.
Nah, if they would have brought us Taco Bell, I would have just been like, yeah, I'm good.
Did you find a dish? Did you end up settling on a dish that you liked out there that was a little more traditional cuisine?
Nah, man, I tried to open up my, because I'm really like, stick to the same thing, you know, especially when I'm traveling, I eat what I know.
Yeah.
But I tried to open up and try some different food, and I ended up getting sick, man. Like,
oh,
I was out, like, I couldn't even practice, like, sick.
Yeah.
So after that, I was only eating rice, broccoli, eggs, you know, safe stuff.
Yeah.
It's crazy how advanced China is. I was sick. Like, I felt like I had, like, food poisoning. They gave me, like, they was like, okay, just take this pill. And I was good the next day. Like, super good. It's crazy. Like,
that's awesome.
Like, what? Like, you know what I'm saying? Yeah. So, like, it's crazy.
Some of that.
Yeah.
And I remember I had food poisoning, man. I was, like, sick for, like, 3-4 days, bro. Like talking, like, couldn't really move, couldn't eat anything. You know, and it was slowly. Yeah. Dang, I gotta get that magic Chinese pill.
Yeah, I was like, man, but it had me right though. I can't even hold you. It had me right.
Okay.
What were the games like over there? Did you guys find some good competition? Did you run into like Jimmer Fredette, or I think Yabusele, Gershon Yabusele was still kicking around out there at that time, right?
Yeah. So out there, so obviously it was the summer. So we didn't actually – so, like, we played the CBA teams, but they only had the national players.
Gotcha. Yeah.
So the Americans that the CBA signed obviously wasn't in the country. But I can tell you this. We played some China teams, and I'm talking about, like, 6'5 point guard from 6'5 to on up, starting at the point guard, 6'5, next guy. Mm-hmm. 6'7" two guard, like, it's crazy. Like, it's something I've never seen before. And the gyms was super hot and super packed.
Yes. Yeah, that's what I was wondering. What was that atmosphere like? You know, like,
yeah, man, the gyms was super packed, super hot. In China, you could smoke indoors.
Mm-hmm.
So it's just like you look up at the nosebleed and it's just like a cloud.
Oh,
yeah, crazy happening.
That's amazing. That's funny. Yeah, super passionate fan base.
Dang. Getting used to that, was it hard to breathe in there, man? Like, what the hell is that?
They make sure, like, you know, you're definitely hydrated and everything. Like, you know, they're not just throwing you into like a hot gym, like play 40 minutes. You know what I'm saying? You get like outside of the gym, like they make sure you have all the facilities and everything you need to recuperate and recover. So.
Nice. No, that's good to hear at least. So did you run into, I think Ejion Leon was still out there, right? The Bucks pick. Maybe he was doing his stint in the NBA at that point, but he might've been.
Maybe. I think he still was in the NBA, but I'm not sure.
I know he's back there playing in CBA these days and he cooks it out there. No puns intended, but Bristol Bristol Flyers, you know, that you said that the coach out there was the coach of the Bristol Flyers.
No, the coach out there was actually coaching the Cheshire, I believe.
Okay.
Coach Cofino was coaching Cheshire in the BBL, but he was my coach in China, and coaches, especially like that, it's they might have a group chat, like they talk every day.
Right.
You know what I'm saying? And he kind of put the word in for me to go play at Bristol. So yeah, that was that situation.
Nice. So did you like Bristol, and you know, was it a good experience over there? And you averaged about 10-4 for the year.
Yeah, it was a good experience in Bristol. Bristol is a good city. It's different because I've never been to, like, obviously I traveled there playing with the Lions, but I never like stayed there. It was like go to a game and then leave. So just being able to live in another part of England was definitely different. But Bristol was a good time. It's a lot of good people, and it's, their fans are crazy in Bristol.
Super yeah, crazy. I was listening to a BBL pod that you had hopped on for a couple of seconds back in the day. I think it was November 2020 you had hopped on it. And they're passionate over there. Like, the people underestimate, like, you know, obviously Americans are addicted to the NBA ball and college ball, but there's – huge basketball fans and huge basketball followings for all those leagues and all those different countries in Europe. That's definitely a underappreciated part.
Yeah, for sure. For sure.
So you ended up bopping back to South America after your Bristol Flyers
stay? Yeah, man. I did Ecuador and I did Panama.
Nice. And what was that like? Did you miss the warm weather? You want a little summer vacation real quick before you come back to London for the big time checks again? Or
no, man, it was I went to Ecuador, man, and that league is, it's different. It's back to like some, like in South America, it's some of the gyms, it's like outside inside. It's like that in Panama too. I don't know if you all know that, but it's like a gym, a stadium, but it's like outside, you know what I'm saying? It's like a dome, but like with the sides knocked out.
Yeah, kind of like the soccer stadiums in Europe, right?
Yeah. So that was different. But it was back to, you know, you got to get it. It's everywhere. Like, I feel like everywhere I went, I kind of had to prove myself, even though like my track record spoke for itself. But like I said, like, nobody cares about your old stats. You know what I'm saying? Like, nobody cares what you did two years ago, 5 years ago. It's what you can do, you know what I'm saying, in that moment. So I felt like everywhere I go, like, I needed to prove myself. And that was my mindset in going into any job for the first time. Yeah, it worked out well. It was different. We traveled a lot, man. Like, we was on the bus crazy. That's the difference though, like, that traveling in South America, like, when you driving, like, you in the mountains, you driving, you know what I'm saying?
what's your pastime on those long bus rides? Are you a music guy? You listening to podcasts? You reading books? You got a Game Boy you bring along? What's your time killer on those long rides?
I'm usually listening to music, and if I'm not, I'm knocked out.
Nice. That's a good time to sleep.
Yeah, like I could get sleep. I'm one of those people that get sleep anywhere. I get the best sleep on a plane, and it's weird. People say it's not even comfortable. How are you sleeping on a plane? If I got a window seat on a plane, I'm gonna holler at you when we land.
Yeah.
That's not a bad not a bad tendency with all those transatlantic flights you've made, man. That's not a bad trick you got there, falling asleep on the plane.
Yeah, sure.
No, that's awesome. So did you enjoy the beach a little bit while you were down there in South America?
Yeah, actually we was, people don't understand, like when you go to like Panama and Dominican Republic and all these places, mm-hmm. like, you're not like if you was to go on vacation there, you would probably go to like Punta Cana or somewhere and be on a resort. Like, when you're playing basketball there, if the team is close to a resort, you on a resort, but you really in these cities with these people and living, going, eating and shopping, you know, with these people, and they don't speak English. So you have to, you know, you have to find a way. But I thought that was interesting. And I actually like that, like, to go out and see, you know, saying different cultures and stuff like that. So I really enjoyed my time there. I took a lot of pictures. Like, now, like, I do the visuals for my brand and everything, so I take pictures. So even back then, I was out just taking pictures and, you know, just enjoying like the community that I was in. Like, and like, I believe we was in like San Carlos. It wasn't like we was on the, you know what I'm saying, like, yeah, on the resort. Like, now you're really living with the people.
Yeah. Now that's great. And everybody, yeah, we've talked with a few players, you know, and making that transition was hard, but you know, for the guys that had said that, you know, they kind of submersed themselves and, you know, got involved with what's going on around them.
Yeah.
Had a lot more success, man. And
really, yeah, of course, because like, I see guys like a lot of guys like go to these countries and they just stay inside and play Xbox or the PS4 like all day, like when they're not practicing. And I mean, that's cool, you know, but I like to get out and see stuff, especially if I'm there. Yeah. You know?
Definitely. Hell yeah.
That's awesome. That's the dream right there, man. Get paid to play ball and explore the world while you're at it. That's awesome.
Yeah. So yeah, it was cool. Panama was cool. It was definitely cool.
Was that kind of a similar situation to your previous South America spot in terms of team layouts, you know, kind of a couple Americans per team and then kind of slap together whoever else is around you?
Yeah. I would say in Panama, the nationals that we had, they played on the national team. So they was really good.
Nice.
And it's usually like that in these leagues. It's spread it out. I kind of downplayed it earlier. But it's usually like the nationals are spread it out throughout the league, which they are pretty good. But when I got to Panama, yeah, the competition, everything was legit. It's pretty good.
Nice. How'd you get the look from Surrey? Was that from like your previous two BBL stops that kind of your name was still in the pool there and they were like, hey, levels available, let's pick them up. We need to score.
Yeah. Honestly, that's what I think. But I remember I haven't really spoke to Creon before I signed with Surrey. I just remember us playing Surrey and I had like 33 and I was kind of like going back and forth with Creon, but it was kind of like a competitive thing, like, you know, like every time I score I look over, you know, just like edgy type type trash talk. And after that, I guess he kind of just kept me in the back, you know, Yeah. So that's kind of before then, that's kind of really. And I talked to his son, Kalen, too. I talked to Kalen a lot. Kalen played in the BBL for another team, Worcester. And he was on that team with Zaire Taylor, the point guard that I mentioned I played with in London. And they won some silverware that year. So ended up going to Surrey and playing, and I ended up talking to him. He was like, you know, what you think about coming playing in Surrey? So that's kind of how that happened.
That's pretty sweet. I mean, you know, you're a good scorer when you cook someone, and you know, years later they're like, I still remember getting cooked by that kid. He's available. Let's get him.
Yeah, that's always pretty dope. That's always.
And you didn't disappoint, man. Your first year in Surrey, you dropped almost 20 a game. Like I said, off the top there, 6 boards, 2.5 assists, a steal per game. You were one of the best players in the BBL that year. What was that like, kind of, you know, not just making it to pro level, but being like, oh, I'm elite at this level right now? Like,
it was cool, man. I feel like that year I actually came to Surrey late. I didn't start the season with Surrey. I was in Miami, just working out, and it was real humbling because obviously I came in with a chip on my shoulder, wanting to prove myself, like always, and I ended up signing. So it'll be after they played like the cup. I ended up signing like around Christmas time. And before then, like I said, I was in Miami and I was working out. And that's a weird time for basketball players, you know, just that time where you just waiting to sign. Mm-hmm. And it's like, you know, you're trying to stay focused. And all you know is like, I just got to keep my work ethic up and something will happen. But I feel like if a lot of basketball players worry too much, you can't let basketball worry you to where like you're just out of the loop in real life.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying? And throughout that time while I was working out, I was going to the gym. I was working out in Miami, and I'm brushing elbows and around players that's in the same position as me, but like to the elite level. Like I remember speaking to Mario Chalmers. Like I'm in the gym with Chalmers. I'm in the gym with Michael Beasley. At that time, Amaya Shumpert was a free agent at that time. I'm in the gym and I'm just having a conversation with these guys that's the same in the same situation as me. And they're like, Yeah, man. Like, and these are guys that's actually turning down overseas money. You know what I'm saying?
Right.
Like, you know what I'm saying? Like, and I'm like, dang, that's crazy. So it kind of puts into perspective, like, what's going on and like how to humble yourself and actually work on your craft, man, and believe in your work ethic. And I think that's what my first year at Surrey was, just the fruits of my work ethic before I came and my mindset.
Definitely. And that's, I mean, the level that you're at, the degree of separation is like nothing. So it's, you know, like you're saying, like Beasley's in the middle of a contract situation, Shumpert, like, yeah. The difference between the best player and or the, you know, the bottom of the NBA and the top of the, you know, the other pros in the world ain't that much. It's, you know, opportunity and luck sometimes as much as anything.
Sure.
That's cool. You got to work out with them. Yeah. Was that like a specific trainer or something that got you all together?
Yeah, the trainer is Ronnie Taylor, out of Miami. He's pretty notorious. Him and, you know, you have like Remy workouts down there. But yeah, that was a trainer, Ronnie Taylor. Shout out Taylor Sports Group.
Oh yeah, I've heard of, definitely heard of Taylor Sports Group.
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah, and he's not too far from Miami. Well, still kind of far, but he's in Florida.
I'm like Orlando area. So
are you in Orlando?
Yeah, man. So I've been meeting players, coaches, you know, for the last couple of years. I lived down here 3 years, then went back to Illinois. Now I'm back here again. So, yeah, right. Man, if you're ever in Orlando, let me know.
Yeah, for sure, man. I'm not too much in Orlando, but if I'm, like you said, if I'm ever up there, for sure, man, we can get up.
Hell yeah. So then was that season shortened by COVID or was it the next one?
No, that was the season shortened by COVID.
Yeah. Nice. So what was that kind of like? Did you end up making it back to the States, or did you kind of like, you know, hang low in the London for a bit there and wait for it to blow over? Or?
Yep. I stayed out here. I actually was quarantined in London for the whole like thick part of the quarantine, while everything was still going on, when everything was shut. I was out here.
Nice. That's what was.
Did you have to do workouts? Like, were you guys able to get in the gym, or were you just stuck at home?
This one that was like fresh. So like everything was closed. Like after the league said, okay, we're going to end the season, that's when everything was literally closed. This when everybody was in the crib type.
Oh no.
Yeah.
What were you doing to stay fresh? Were you just kind of like doing plyometrics in your hallway or?
Yep. Plyometrics, jump ropes, push-ups, sit-ups, ab roller, you know, whatever to get a little sweat in. May go outside, take a jog, take a walk, just whatever to stay fresh.
Do they have any courts over there, or did they, like, take rims off like they did here?
Yep, they shut it down.
Yeah, man.
Brutal. Tough. So did you stay in London through that whole time? Because you ended up – or Surrey, rather, you ended up staying re-signing with them in September of this past year, kind of like, I guess, mid COVID. But <Right. laughs> how'd that all work out?
Yeah, I ended up I ended up staying in London, and I ended up leaving. I'm not pretty sure when I left, but it was about like the summertime. So usually I always go like the summer, I'll go to Miami and work out. I live in Miami. And nice. I work out. So I ended up going to Miami, back to Miami. To work out, and I kind of knew I was already gonna come back just from conversations, and so yeah, I ended up coming back, flying back.
Nice. And what can you talk a little bit about what happened with the Scorchers this year? Because I was reading / looking at stuff, and they were like projected top, you know, team in that league. And you know, you're obviously one of their best players, and it kind of I saw you only ended up having 8 games. Did you get injured, or did some other situation kind of happen? You had to leave, or
no? It was I didn't get injured or anything like that. Like you said, we definitely was projected top of the league. We had a big to come in, and Rashad Hassan, who's elite, and we had a point guard who's elite, Connor Cashaw. And we started out good, and Rashad ended up leaving. And we kind of just, to make a long story short, didn't really live up to expectations early. And it was something that I accepted. I accepted the glory when we was winning. So I would have to accept, you know, whatever comes with the bad situation. And that's kind of what it was. But I mean, it was, I felt like people in the organization was put in a place to where they just had to make a decision. And they made the decision, and it was no hurt. It was no harm. I literally still work out at Surrey right now, every day, like me and Creon, me and Gavin, which is the GM, is real close, and we speak. So it wasn't a bad situation.
That's always good, at least. You know, it's tough to have a disappointing season with all that, you know, expectations going into it. But, you know, no bridges burned, no harm, no foul is always another year.
Definitely, man. It's always you got to keep moving forward. So, like I said, good and bad is necessary. Everything can't go your way. Everything can't be perfect. You feel me?
Definitely. So you're working out now, kind of you know, at their facilities, waiting for that next contract. Any you think you're gonna stay in BBL, or are you looking at different countries, different leagues? I know you've always been a world traveler and open to new opportunities. So.
Yeah, I'm definitely a world traveler, you know, opportunities. It'll be love to play in the BBL. I would love to play in the BBL, but like I said, conversations just need to be had. And that's where I'm at with it right now. I don't want to spill too much tea.
Nah, you're good, man. Nah, we're a big fan, so we hope you get another nice opportunity soon, and we'll be keeping an eye out for it, for sure.
You know, if there's one thing, though, like, I guess that you could leave, like, you know, for, I guess, our listeners, you know, that you'd want to offer that could potentially help somebody chasing their, you know, dream to, you know, whatever it is to stay involved in the game of basketball, something that you could take away and, you know, provide them that they could help them, you know, keep chasing their dream, a little encouragement.
Yeah, man, what I would say is for sure, just stay true to yourself, man. Have a foundation. Stick to your core morals, and everything will work out. Like, you know what I'm saying? I always like to preach everything is not going to be perfect, but that's what we learn. Basketball is something that's you have to problem solve, and that's the same thing with life. So just keep apply those same life principles to basketball, man, and it'll really take you far.
Hell yeah. No, I appreciate that, man, and because you're living proof, man, of it's honestly, it's pretty amazing to see your story and, you know, the moves that you made, the people that you connected with, and how you carried yourself it was definitely beyond your years, man, because you're always talking to high school kids on, you know, hey, stay clean with this, you know, watch how you're, you know, being over here, you know, you're always got eyes on you. It seemed like, you know, you really embodied that, and shoot, it just seems like, man, it's a great story for kids to learn from, you know, and definitely not being scared to ask questions and work with others, you know, and shoot, you found yourself early, man. It seems like you really know yourself.
Yeah, man, for sure, man. I think that just come with, like, you know, just trusting your grind, because I wasn't like somebody to come out of high school as like top 50, whatever, five-star recruit, but every summer, like, I added to my bag, you know what I'm saying? Yep. And that's where you see, like, where I'm at now. That's a product of all of that. So just trust your grind, man. I remember, like you said, at UNO, like, I was a mid-range king, you know what I'm saying? But that summer is where I really added my three ball. It's crazy. I'm in the history books at UNO for field goal percentages, and I probably shot at least, I would say, about 10 layups the whole season. Like, everything was a mid-range, like jumper or floater or something like that. You know what I'm saying? And that summer, I added a three ball. Like I said, I would add long range shots to my workout. And my first year, my 3-point percentage was higher than my field goal percentage at London.
Yeah, 49.
So, yeah, that's
crazy. Yeah, no, that's definitely great advice. You got anything you want to plug? Where folks can go buy your clothing line and all that stuff? Any social medias we can follow along with your next contract coming up and all that good stuff?
Oh, yeah, for sure, man. So the website is scum-worldwide.com. I'm dropping something soon for London Fashion Week, so y'all could
stay
tuned for that. My Twitter is Louis_Vail. If y'all want to follow me, I follow back on Twitter. So yeah, that's really where you could catch me at, man.
Nice. Is SCUM an acronym? I always kind of wondered that.
Yes, it is. It stands for Success Comes Upon Maturity.
Hell yeah. No, that's great. And you definitely, are like, and you were saying, you're the embodiment of that. And you've always had the right mindset about it and believe in yourself and just kind of kept grinding. And half of basketball is mental, especially when you're a shooter. Exactly. If you're in your own head, you ain't going to shoot right. So definitely got the 6 inches between the ears kind of thing has been right forever. So you checking out Summer League though? What's your NBA squad actually?
I'm not a squad guy. I like to watch. It's a lot of players that I like to watch. So yeah, I couldn't even.
New Orleans didn't really give you much to become a big fan of. So in the last 20 years, so. Yeah, Zion. They're gonna screw that up too, though.
I've never been a fan of the Pelicans though, but I watch them because I actually like to watch Brandon Ingram though. So I watch
Ingram's nice.
I like to watch Brandon Ingram, so I watch a lot of Pelican games.
Okay. That's funny you mentioned that, because that year that we were at GBSL, Andy and I spent a month out in Vegas, like some true lunatic basketball lunatics. We watched in 30 days, I want to say we watched 90 games between Gold Basketball Summer League, the NBA Summer League, the Adidas National Championship, the Reebok National Championship, all those AAU championships. And it was Brandon Ingram versus Thon Maker at that time. They were both like 15 and 16. And we would go check out those games. You know, the stands are just full of like every ACC and Big East coach there could be. And that's when Ingram got on our radar. And we're like, who the hell is this 6'7", like scrawny 15-year-old that is just bringing up the ball and cooking all the best players in the country right now? This is ridiculous. Like Carlton Bragg was out there.
His game crazy. I like to watch Brad Ingram, man. I like to watch, obviously, KD.
Oh, yeah.
James Harden, Crafty.
Yeah.
I like to watch basketball. Like, even right now in the Summer League, I like to watch the guys, saying? It's a different pace. Like, Summer League is a different pace from the NBA. It's a different pace from AAU. So, I like to watch all basketball. It's a different pace from the TBT.
Yeah.
I even watch the Big Three.
Big Three is great. That's some nostalgia right there too. You got like Glenn Davis running around and shit. It's great. Yeah. Joe Johnson doing his thing still.
Crazy.
Yeah. I think the thing that's underrated with Summer League, like people talk shit about Summer League that don't understand Summer League, I feel like, because dudes are playing way harder in Summer League than like your average December basketball NBA game, Yes. Like people are fighting for a contract, fighting for their basketball lives. Like you get to see like some cool dudes you're never going to see otherwise. And like, then you see like the, Rudy Gobert, like before he was defensive player of the year, he was getting like 8 blocks a game in summer league. And people are like, wait a minute, who the hell is this French kid that's just splatting everything?
But and it transfers.
I love it.
Definitely transfers.
Yeah. It translates for sure. Like, that's where people kind of show that elite skill. I mean, we see Jalen Green right now. He's clearly going to be a microwave in the NBA. Like, he's going to be fun to watch for a bit. Then I'm watching my season, of course. I'm a Boston area kid, so I'm a Celtics guy. But I love just watching any hoopers kind of thing. I like to say any, and I just like watching talented people do cool shit. So
I like that. That's all.
Yeah, man. So
we're definitely with you on that. But hell yeah, we appreciate you, man. It's been about a couple hours here, so we're gonna let you go. And
for sure, man. Appreciate y'all, man. I'm definitely gonna hit. I'm gonna hit both y'all up in the DM.
Man.
Get off this for sure.
All right. Sounds good, brother.
Later, boss.
See you later. All right.